Well, welcome everyone. We are so excited that you are here to join us this morning for our first parent webinar for the 23-24 school year. I'm really excited about this topic for our families. We've had several parents ask for this over the last couple of years, and our amazing secondary transition teacher, Miss Elizabeth McCarthy, worked to get this session set up. So I am Rebecca Sharp, the Executive Director of Special Education and Student Services here in Falls Church. We do an amazing job. And one of the reasons why we do such an amazing job is great folks like Ms. McCarthy working so hard with our families and our community agencies and your students. So I am going to turn it over to Ms. McCarthy, who's going to tell us about our presenter and our session today.
Good morning, everyone. If I have not met you yet, I'm Elizabeth McCarthy, the transition coordinator for Falls Church City. I am located at Meridian High School on the fourth floor. So anytime, stop by, say hello. My focus is mainly at the high school, working with students with 504s and IEPs to help them plan for after high school. So we do a lot of work with students identifying college paths, careers paths, and then understanding what supports we can identify to help them get to their goals. As Rebecca said, this is like first of many webinars that we hope to have this year. I know I'm working with the college and career counselor at the high school to do a college seminar to what that looks like for students who are pursuing 2-4 year any type of educational setting post high school. What would that look like for a student who has a 504 and IEP? And we've just spoken about maybe doing one on guardianship, job interviewing, employment, self-advocacy. So if you have any ideas as parents, please talk, let me know, send me an email about ideas or topics that you have heard in the community that you feel that parents could use information on, and I will do my best to provide a platform so we can all get better informed. Today, we are very lucky to have Lucy Bino with us from the ARC of Northern Virginia. She is currently serving as the Director of Advocacy, but I met Lucy, we at least know, 11 years ago. And she wears many, many hats and is a wealth of information. She has worked in residential settings for people with medical needs. She has been a case manager for individuals with public supports. She focuses a lot of her efforts on supported decision making that we talked about, when I just mentioned guardianship, ensuring people with disabilities have independent and integrated housing, and reforming the justice system to better recognize and meet the needs of people with disabilities. She loves what she does. And as a result of this, she was selected in 2018 as a 40 Under 40 awardee by the Leadership Center of Excellence, and also in 2020, 40 Under 40 awardee by the Washington Business Journal. Her presentation is going to be amazing. What the way we will run this is that she has a slideshow presentation, probably around 35 to 40 minutes. And then as we go along, if you would all like to put your any questions you have in the chat at the end of the presentation, we'll leave some time, and then I will go through and ask the questions in the chat so that Lucy can get to them. All right. Well, Lucy, we are ready when you are. Thank you so much.
That sounds great. As promised by Liz, I am going to pull up those slides and start walking us through things. I'm going to talk a lot about waivers today. In my mind, waivers are not a particularly linear topic, meaning it's very hard to start at one point with waivers and think, oh, this is logically what we would talk about next. So at any point, if you have a question, like Liz said, just put it in the chat. Hopefully by the time we've wrapped up the slides, a lot of those questions will be answered, but we'll make sure that any questions you put in, we get a chance to answer today. And then you can reach out to me anytime. to ask questions about waiver or anything else you would like. And you can copy Liz and we can learn together, or you can reach out and just ask what you'd like. A lot of my work is talking with families. So we'll go ahead and dive in. So the ARC of Northern Virginia has been around for, let's see, 61 years now. We are based in the Falls Church, Fairfax area. For years, our office was in the city of Falls Church, and now we're just on the opposite side of the Mosaic District. Our work hits on a bunch of different areas. One of those is advocacy, and that's a lot of trying to change laws and budgets to better suit the disability community and make sure that we've got the rights and the supports that we need. Another piece is education, meaning things like this workshop. Lots of written one-page guides and long guides, written or recorded short videos and long videos, webinars, multi-day seminars, all kinds of ways to learn about disability services and supports. And as I mentioned at the beginning, I answer a lot of questions from families. We just talked to thousands of people over the course of the year, answering questions about what services are available, how to apply for something, if you get denied something, if you encounter a challenging situation. So don't ever hesitate to ask. We love answering those questions. I joke a lot that I'm there for the ungoogleable, right? We know that so much of what's out there that we need, you're just not easily going to find. Please just ask. It's free. You can ask as much as you want. As Liz mentioned, we have case managers on our team, and I used to be one of those. So people who work directly with the DD waiver client. So we'll be talking about that DD waiver today, and we'll be hearing about how case managers support individuals in navigating waiver services. We also have a team of public guardians for people who need a guardian but don't have anybody else to serve. We operate a special needs trust, which is a way to save money if you want to continue to be eligible for programs like Medicaid or waiver or Social Security and other kinds of things. And I'll touch on that a little bit briefly in our presentation because it does relate to waiver eligibility. And then our hippest team is called Tech for Independent Living, and they work on custom designed apps for someone's phone or iPad, or some of them can even work on a Kindle, to help people with disabilities learn to use our Metro bus and rail, develop other independent life skills and other things like that. And that work is free too. So most of the things that people do with us are free, and we would love for people to reach out and engage. Today, we're going to talk a lot about the purpose and description of Medicaid waivers to start off. What are they? Why do they exist? And then we'll work through eligibility criteria. So now that we have our head wrapped around what this waiver is, how will we know if we're eligible? What services do they offer? And how would I apply? Then we'll go through, if you're looking at a waiver that has a waiting list, what does that mean? How long? How would I navigate that? Those kinds of things. And as promised, I'll share my contact information at the end so you can reach out anytime and we'll take questions. So diving right into the purpose and description of Medicaid waivers, people traditionally know Medicaid as a health insurance program, and it is for a lot of people, but within that huge umbrella that is Medicaid, there's also this much smaller program called Medicaid waiver. And the waiver is allowing states to offer additional services beyond traditional health insurance to a specific group of people. So in this case, that would be things like, how can I get help at home or on the job or living independently? That's the extra help. For what group of people? People with disabilities, right? If my disability means I need extra help that's not just doctors and nurses, traditional kind of Medicaid services, how do I get that? We talk about waivers a lot because if we're thinking about someone who's going to need ongoing help related to their disability, if it's a little help or a lot, it really all comes through the Medicaid waiver program in Virginia. It's meant to be kind of your one-stop shop for if I'm young, if I'm old, if I have high needs or low needs, if I have a family that can do a lot or not, all of these people are funneled into the waiver system if they're going to need some kind of ongoing supports related to their disability. And because this is a public program, it's either free or very low cost for the person with a disability. And we'll talk through some of that soon. But it's a really important way to get eligible for services that a lot of people with disabilities need and then keep for the rest of their lives once they have them. So today we're going to be talking about two main types of waivers that Virginia has. The first type is bundled in blue at the top of your screen. These are the developmental disability, or DD, waivers. I'm really going to be talking about them today for the most part in a big block, because even though they have different names, most of the services are the same. The application is the same. The waiting list is the same. The eligibility is the same, right? Really, they are a very closely related bundle with some subtle differences that we'll get into once we're talking about really using them. But for the purposes of really understanding waiver basics in Virginia, they're really one big block, those DD waivers. The names of them are on the screen: the Community Living Waiver, the Family and Individual Supports Waiver, or the Building Independence Waiver. These are all big mouthfuls, right? So if you ever hear people saying things like the CL waiver, the FIS waiver, the BI waiver, those are just the initials, the acronyms for these waivers that are for people with developmental disabilities. The other program that I'll talk a little bit about is called the Commonwealth Coordinated Care, CCC for short, plus waiver. And we'll talk a little bit about how these waivers have some similarities and how they have differences today, and how you may know if one or both are a good fit to pursue for your loved one. I'm going to give a high-level overview of the two, and as we go forward, I'm going to kind of stick with this framework where first we talk about DD waivers when we talk about eligibility or services or applying, and then we talk about the CCC plus waiver in comparison. So we'll just go back and forth. So DD waivers require a developmental disability diagnosis. As a student with a disability or a parent or a loved one, you probably know whether or not you're already in that bucket. Autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, those kinds of things are common, but there's no exhaustive list because there are thousands and thousands of developmental disabilities out there, right? There are some people who have one of two or three or 40 people in the world with that same diagnosis. So it's not a list that you have to check. It's just looking at, when I look at my diagnosis, is that considered a developmental disability? The DD waivers offer a big menu of services for the home of the person with a disability, if they're living with family, or if we're talking about post-graduation and they're living on their own. It offers nursing services, services at work, services out and about in the community, so a pretty large array of options, and it can offer 24/7 awake staff, if that's what someone needed. I mentioned earlier, our offices offer case management for this waiver, so it comes with a case manager, and the case manager's job is to sit down, not dissimilar from an IEP, sit down with the person with a disability, their loved ones, and service providers, and talk about what does this person need? What does this person want? And how do we use not just the waiver, but school services, parks and rec services, volunteer options, right? How do we use all of the tools in our toolkit to build out a good life, to meet the wants and needs of this person with a disability? So in a lot of ways, it's a really wonderful program, but the downside of it is that it has a waiting list. As I said at the beginning, I know that makes us think, how long? If it was a short answer, I'd give it to you now. It's a tricky answer, so I will save it till we get a little bit later into the discussion, but I will talk through it. And now let's compare that at a high level to the CCC Plus waiver before we take a deeper dive. The CCC Plus waiver is looking to see that the applicant has some kind of disability. It's not just mental health. So it could be a developmental disability, but this waiver was designed originally to keep people out of nursing homes. So a lot of people who are applying have disabilities like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or dementia or all kinds of things like that. So there's no exhaustive list of qualifying disabilities. We're looking for a disability and medical needs. In a minute, we'll dive deeper into what kind of needs that would be. But we're looking here at not just is there a disability, but there's also some kind of significant medical support that this person needs. Unlike the DD waiver, there's a much shorter menu of services here. We'll talk through the specifics soon. But think, okay, this may get me some hours of care in the home, but it's not going to be out-of-home residential services. It's not going to be employment. It may be some very limited nursing. There's a 56-hour-a-week limit on how many hours of that kind of one-on-one in-home caregiver someone can get with this waiver. So much smaller offering in terms of hours of support, and there's no case manager. So we talk often answering questions from families who have this waiver to help them navigate services or find providers or do those kinds of things that a case manager usually does. Now, the reason we talk about this waiver, even though eligibility is smaller than the DD waiver, it offers fewer services, there are fewer service hours, there's no case manager, is because there's also no waiting list. So for perspective, at any given point in time, about a third to a quarter of people who are eligible for the DD waiver can use the CCC plus waiver in the meantime because they've got enough medical needs that they're eligible for both. So it's definitely a minority of people, but it's a big minority. And right now there are about 15,000 people across the state waiting for DD waivers. In the Fairfax Falls Church area, it's about 3,000. So at any given point in time, a significant chunk of those 3,000-ish Fairfax Falls Church area residents are able to use the CCC plus waiver while waiting on the bigger services in the DD waiver. And that's why we talk about both. I mentioned at the beginning, we do a lot of advocacy. One of the things we advocate for is ending that waiting list for the DD waiver. And I would love for that to happen one day and for me to not even need to talk about the CCC plus waiver as an alternative or a sort of stopgap option. So I'll keep on dreaming on that. Now we're going to talk about eligibility for the waivers. And as I said, as I talk about each part of eligibility, I'll go back and forth between the DD waiver and the CCC plus waiver. And eligibility comes in three chunks that we look at: your diagnosis, your functional needs, how much help do you need to do things, and financial criteria. So first, let's look at diagnosis needed for the DD waiver. This slide has just way too many words on it, but I'm telling you, as soon as I say the standard accepted definition of developmental disability, someone says, can you tell me what that is? So I've just resigned myself to putting the standard accepted disability on the screen. Again, you likely know if your loved one has a developmental disability, it onset in childhood, it's going to continue, and you're seeing significant needs or deficits in terms of self-care, communication, learning, getting about, taking control of their own life, independent living, managing money, those kinds of things. So in those areas, we'll be looking for a psychological evaluation that will say, there is a developmental disability. This is where there are strengths and needs. And also the IQ score of the person with a disability is important when applying for this waiver. There's no minimum or maximum IQ. There's no IQ that gets you more or less services, but they look for it. So as you're thinking about applying for this waiver, start as parents, we break out our binders and our files, right? And we go and we make sure that we've got all this documentation handy so that we can show that we're eligible. Yes, we have a DD diagnosis. Yes, we've got this IQ score in hand. By comparison, the CCC plus waiver will look at something like that evaluation to show that there's a disability diagnosis, but because this waiver also requires that the person has significant medical needs, they'll be looking at medical diagnoses as well. Does the person have epilepsy? Does the person have a feeding tube? Does the person have significant OT, PT, speech kinds of needs? Those sorts of things would all be considered medical support needs. I would say a good definition of what a significant medical need is would be, on a regular basis, the person with a disability is getting help from a medical professional, a nurse, a doctor, a trained physical therapist, etc., or by people trained by medical professionals. So for example, if someone with a disability uses a G-tube, a feeding tube, to eat, usually before they leave the hospital, parents are trained by the doctors and nurses on how to feed that child through the G-tube. So even though the parent's doing it at home, it's likely going to qualify them because in order to provide the care that child needs, a medical professional had to train the family. That's kind of a good way to think about it. So is a medical professional regularly intervening for this person, or were family trained by medical professionals to regularly offer supports? There's no black and white list of what kind of medical diagnoses qualify the person, because it's not so much, do you have the medical diagnosis like I talked about? It's, are we seeing those interventions that a professional or a parent trained by a professional are having to offer? It's that, do we have the need that goes along with it? In the middle of the screen, and I'm happy to share these slides with Liz to pass back out, or you can just look it up online. There's a free informal self-evaluation for this waiver that I think is really helpful. So if you're thinking we're somewhere between we take a pill in the morning and we have 24/7 nursing needs, is this a good thing for me to apply for? I think that self-help tool is really beneficial. It's things that you as a caregiver will know how to answer off the top of your head. And it just gives you a quick sense of, yeah, based on what you're saying, likely this is something that's going to be a good fit for you, or likely it isn't. It's just another way to help you prepare. So first we said for waiver eligibility, we'll talk about diagnosis. So we've kind of been through that. We need a developmental disability for the DD waivers and a disability and a medical diagnosis for the CCC plus waiver. The next part of eligibility is functional need. How much help does that person with a disability need from others? Because to state the obvious, you can be really significantly impacted by your disability, but maybe in other ways you're very independent and you don't want any help or need any help from others. So in that case, even though the person has a significant disability, they may not be waiver eligible. What we're looking for is, does your disability require you to get help from others? Family, friends, school staff, doctors, et cetera, right? That's what we're looking at. For the DD waivers, that eligibility is measured in a test that the state uses called the VIDES for short, because the long name is Virginia Individual Developmental Disabilities Eligibility Survey, which is an accurate title, but a mouthy title. So there's a version of the VIDES for babes until their third birthday, from 3 till the day before 18, and a version for people 18 plus. And I mentioned previously, the developmental disability diagnosis is looking at things like medical needs, communication, learning skills. Those are the same categories exactly that the VIDES is asking about. The VIDES is a public document. And in my opinion, if someone is going to give you the test questions before you have to take the test, it's a great idea to look at them. So you can go to thearcofnova.org. The second option at the top of every part of our website says Resource Library. If you click Resource Library, it brings up an alphabetical menu by topic. So if you go all the way down to W for waivers, then there's an FAQ, a Frequently Asked Questions Waivers document, that's essentially a two-page version of this presentation. A little lower than that are the VIDES themselves. I like them because I think the questions are written in family-friendly language. You could read it and understand what they're getting at. And if you printed it off or looked at it on your phone or computer at home, you can write down the answers you would give to all these questions and go back to the front, transfer those answers, and you'll see, oh, yep, I see our answers line up with us being eligible in these categories. So when you apply, you'll know, so long as I answer there in that application meeting the same way that I answered here at home, I have a reason to believe that we'll be eligible. I also think it's really valuable to look at that ahead of time. It's asking about personal things, bathing, dressing kinds of things that our teens and adults with disabilities don't always relish talking about with strangers. So preparing them, letting them know what you're going to share, talking about how that's a time that really that we're emphasizing needs and not so much strengths, and that there's a reason for that, is a great thing to do as a parent or caregiver, so that they don't think, hey, you always tell me I'm great and I'm learning all these skills and now we've sat in this meeting and you're talking about how I can't do all this stuff, right? Lay out that framework so people understand what's going on. You'll also see that in some ways, eligibility for the VIDES is what I would call fragile, meaning to be eligible in one category or not can be the difference between saying something happens weekly or every 10 days. Right? So it's great to look at that assessment ahead of time and know you want to give a clear answer when you're asked these questions, because a wishy-washy answer like, oh, it happens every 1 to 2 weeks, could be interpreted one way or another on the scoring guide, and that can make a difference in whether or not someone's ultimately able to get services. For the CCC Plus waiver, there's a different tool they use to look at functional eligibility. It's called the Uniform Assessment Instrument. And if you or anyone else you know has ever done a long-term stay in a hospital, entered a physical rehab facility after a surgery, gone to a nursing home, it's that same kind of assessment. And really, it focuses on two things: personal care, bathing, dressing, restroom, getting around kind of things, and medical care. a lot of what I would say are fairly duplicative questions. You'll hear those things over and over and over. Do you need hands-on help with these kinds of things? And those kinds of things, personal care and medical care. The tough thing about the Uniform Assessment Instrument, or UAI, is it doesn't have a scoring guide on it. So by all means, look at it ahead of time. There's no reason not to, so you know what the questions are going to be. But to some degree, on the other end of it, there's nursing interpretation of those answers. So there's not a, whereas with the DD waiver, it's black and white. If you answered this way, scored this way, you're eligible or you're not. With the UAI, there's some interpretation and a little bit of subjectivity there. But it does give you a good sense, again, about whether or not these are the kinds of questions you would answer with a yes or a no. So we talked about the diagnosis you need. Do I have a diagnosis that would fit one or both waivers? The functional need, would they say I need enough supports for the waivers? And the last part of eligibility is financial need. And I want to be really clear that the financial need is for the person with a disability, not their parents, not their caregivers, not the household. And that's part of what makes this very different from regular Medicaid health insurance. When you're applying for the waiver, we're only looking at the money in the name of the person with a disability, even if they're a young child. The person with a disability, regardless of age, has a gross monthly income cap of $2,742 this year. It goes up with the Social Security benefit amount, so it adjusts a little each year. Once this number needs to be updated on the screen here, but once the person with a disability has a monthly income of more than about $1,500, they'll start to have a copay for their waiver services. It's not based upon how much service they need. It's just based upon their income. So if you have a child who has no income because they're a child, or someone who has graduated and is starting to work and is earning $1,400 a month, no matter how much support they need under the waiver, they pay nothing for it. You pay nothing for it. Really, the waiver is just looking at, does that person with a disability have income over about $1,500 a month? And at that point, they start to have a copay for it. Adults with the Medicaid waiver cannot have more than $2,000 in assets in their name. So that would be things like a checking account or a savings account. Sometimes people have stocks or bonds that parents or grandparents or friends put in their names. All those kinds of things are added together to look at their resources that are available. Since children don't legally own property, they're not considered to be resource holders, but you want to be prepared for that 18th birthday, of course, when things suddenly could be considered to be in their name. And to underline it one more time, parent income and assets never matter and are never considered in waiver eligibility. I told you before, we run a special needs trust, and then I bring it up in this context. And that's because $2,000 in assets to be eligible is not very much money, to state the obvious. And we don't want people with disabilities to live in poverty forever. So if someone with a disability now has or in the future will have or inherit more than $2,000 ever, they can put that money into a special needs trust. And a special needs trust works in many ways like a regular bank account, but means the money can only be spent on the person with a disability. They couldn't spend it on a new car for their girlfriend or a vacation for the whole family, right? I mean, it's money explicitly for the person with a disability. So if they needed a car or a vacation, it could pay for that. And that would keep the person eligible for programs like Medicaid and Medicaid waiver and some Social Security benefits and housing vouchers and all kinds of things our community needs. So it's a great thing to think about. Now we'll dive a little bit into services. So hopefully at this point, we've got DD and CCC plus waiver in our mind, a little bit about whether or not we think we'd be eligible and what does that get us? And to some degree, that varies based upon the person's needs and situations, right? If you said we've got two retired parents who have this as their only child, and all they want to do is be home and dote on this child, then probably they need fewer caregiving hours, regardless of the nature of the disability, because you already have a bunch of caregivers in place. If those parents are working, aren't able to provide the care, have other kids to care for, have other obligations outside of the house, then that person probably needs more support, for example. And you'll sit down with your team when you have a waiver and talk through this. Again, similar to an IEP meeting. So first, I'll look at residential services. You don't have to memorize everything that's on the screen, but it's meant to give you a visual of, across the top of the chart are our three DD waivers, community living, family, and individual supports, and building independence waiver. And all the slides are set up this way with those first and the CCC Plus waiver on the far right-hand side. So it's to give you a comparison that when we talk about residential services, meaning living out of your family home, all of the DD waivers offer some kind of residential services. The CCC Plus waiver offers nothing. You would, of course, only choose one residential service at a time because you only have one house, but you can move between them. So if you chose one and it wasn't a good fit and later you wanted to go to another, that's okay. So let's say the person with a disability first opts for a group home. This is a very kind of old traditional model, and it's usually 5 to 6-ish unrelated people with disabilities living in a house with staff rotating in and out 24 hours a day. Let's say that people think, well, I've heard of group homes and this seems like a great idea. And then the person with a disability moves in and they think, there are a lot of loud people having their behaviors and their own schedule in this house. And there's one vehicle for the whole household and I can't go out and do the things that I want. And this is not a great environment for me. Then we may say, okay, let's look at something else. What about shared living, where you'll live with someone without a disability, almost like roommates? And that roommate, if you will be there sleeping overnight, but is on call if there's a knock at the door or a person cries out or there's a fire alarm or what have you. And they can provide supports during the day. And maybe we offer in some other care who comes in on top of it, those kinds of things. Or maybe the person with a disability says, actually, that group home was way too much support for me. I really just want someone dropping in a couple of hours a day, or maybe even one or two longer days a week to do things like meal plan, meal prep, shop for groceries, open the mail, pay the bills, all those kinds of higher level logic and thinking things. But maybe the person is otherwise pretty safe and okay, you know, heating up their own dinner that's pre-made in the fridge and putting themselves to bed and waking up with the alarm in the morning. Maybe we have someone who looks at an option called sponsored residential. And as opposed to the roommate option in shared living where people are moving in together, and sponsored residential, usually the person with a disability is moving into the existing home of someone else. So let's say it's a special ed teacher or a previous residential care manager or someone who has some disability expertise who says, sure, it's cool with me if a person with a disability lives with me and they'll be part of my family. So just like everybody else, we'll get up and we'll eat breakfast together with them and the rest of my family, and we'll have dinner together and we'll go on vacations together, right? They're really building a very family style life together. And the final residential option is called supported living. So if you think about a group home and then you shrunk it and customized it. So maybe you said, I am choosing my roommates and it's one person or two people, or maybe just me. And I want staff there in my condo or apartment 24 hours a day or every minute that I'm awake, whatever that looks like. You can do that with supported living, or you can drop it down to fewer supports. So as someone receives a waiver, you start thinking about what's a good option for now and then what may be options for later if you need to change. And then we'll move on to employment and daytime services. And again, you'll see our DD waivers all offer essentially everything in the employment and day realm. The CCC Plus waiver offers nothing. Unlike residential services, you could mix or match your day and employment services. So what would that look like? Maybe one day a week, that person started with traditional day support. I go to a big building. There's all people with disabilities and paid staff there. And we learn crafts, or we learn skills, or we do little activities. And maybe one day a week, a small group of people and I go out and we work at, I'm trying to think what's a restaurant near me, Popeyes, whatever. And we get paid to work at Popeyes and I get support on the job from my job coach and my peers. People go out for community engagement to work on learning new skills. How do I shop for that food at the grocery store, et cetera? And then as we talked about waiver having income eligibility, there's benefits coordinators who can help people with disabilities figure out, if I work this much, how do I make sure I stay eligible for all the benefits and things that I need? Now let's talk about in-home services, which can be done in the home of the family. And here we see our CCC Plus waiver finally offers some choice. All of the waivers come with a one-to-one caregiver you can use in the family home that would just come to help with what that person needed. Is it bathing, dressing, restroom, dinner things? Is it going for a walk and social skills and filling out college applications kinds of things, right? It's you would choose someone based upon the the knowledge, skills, and abilities you needed them to have. Most of the waivers come with respite services. So meaning on top of the regular hours that this caregiver comes, we know there are going to be some weeks with summer breaks and spring breaks and things like that where we need extra care or parents are out of town. And the respite hours are just an additional pool of hours you can pull from and say, oh, we've run out of our weekly hours. Let's use some extras to fill in the care gaps we have right now. All of the waivers offer up to $5,000 a year to change the home or the car of the person with a disability to make it more accessible. Ramps, push-button doorways, that kind of thing. And then all of the waivers offer what's called the personal emergency response system, which would be a way for the person with a disability to just push a button that would call 911, say their name, where they live, their diagnosis, their needs. So even if they couldn't articulate everything that was wrong, the right first responders would be coming out already having a lot of background information. I'll move on to some other services that the waivers offer. All three of the DD waivers offer electronic home-based supports. And this is the more tech-savvy smart homes kind of thing. Stoves that shut themselves off, remote doorbells. The person with a disability can touch a button even if a caregiver's not in their home at the time and be connected remotely to a caregiver who knows them and can talk them through a tough moment, that kind of thing. All of the waivers offer up to $5,000 a year for assistive technology. I mostly see that being used for things like phones and iPads and communication software, but it can be other things. All of the DD waivers offer some kind of crisis support. So if the person is having a mental health or behavioral crisis and needs some support or stabilization, that's an option. And then all of the DD waivers can offer some more one-to-one support with kind of figuring out how to navigate life. It's called a community guide, right? For example, if the person with a disability was ready to move out, a housing community guide could help the person find a place to rent, figure out what's on the lease, set up with getting furniture, those kinds of things. And then lastly, the waivers offer medical care based upon the needs the person has, which is usually one-to-one nursing. So lots and lots of service options. And again, you'll work through the service menu with your team as you're offered a waiver. So if this seems like something that's worthwhile, let's talk about how you would apply. So in Fairfax and Falls Church that are coupled together, you call your local community services board. It's a local government agency, and their domain is three things: mental health, substance use supports, and developmental disabilities. So they're the one point of entry for all DD services that would come through the state and county. You would call them 703-324-4400. You would say, hey, I heard about these waivers. I think they're a good fit for us. They mail out a big packet of information to you that you'll fill out and return along with that psychological evaluation we talked about that shows the disability and the needs. And then they'll meet with you to do the VIDES that we talked about, where they'll ask about the amount of services someone needs with various tasks throughout the day. And then they'll say, it looks like you're eligible. We'll put you on the waiting list. And back to that waiting list in just a second. For the CCC Plus waiver, and bearing in mind, you could be eligible for both, so you could make these phone calls on the same day or wildly different times apart if you so chose, but you're calling a different local government agency. And in Fairfax, that's in Falls Church, that's the Fairfax Department of Family Services, 703-324-7948. And you're setting up an intake appointment. So they'll do a little screening on the call, asking about hands-on care and medical needs, like we talked about. Then they'll send a nurse out who asks about hands-on care and medical needs in person in your home. And if the nurse thinks that you're likely eligible, then you'll start talking about enrolling in services. So even though this waiver has no waiting list, it's usually at least a couple of months before services start from the point you make that first phone call, right? You're doing meetings, you're sending in paperwork, you're selecting services and providers and all those kinds of things that take a little bit of time. So now we'll finally loop back around to the waiting list for those DD waivers. So if you're told you're eligible, but you're put on a waiting list, it's not that you're waiting for one of those three particular waivers. You're on a shared waiting list, and the time that you'll wait is really unpredictable because it's based upon urgency of need. So sometimes someone doesn't apply. I had a call yesterday from a mom who was 82 and the dad was 92 and the adult with a disability was approaching 60 and the parents couldn't be his caregiver anymore. Fairly urgent situation. So they're going to be fairly high on that waiting list. I would argue they waited about 60 years for services without being on this list. So even though theoretically they're getting services fast once they apply, it's really because they went so long without even applying and lost a lot of benefits along the way, which is a bummer. But if a parent applies with a pretty happy, healthy two-year-old and parents who are able to meet a lot of this kiddo's needs, that child's going to be much further down on the waiting list and is going to wait much longer for services. But at any point in time, we know that can change. So just one of the key reasons for being on that waiting list is if your family suddenly has a crisis, a parent loses a job, so there goes health insurance and money for therapies and co-pays and the house that we had that was adapted and all those things. This is the time when you want to be able to pick up the phone and say, oh my goodness, move us to the top of the waiting list. Not the time you want to say, oh shoot, there was a program we were supposed to apply for. I'll have to do some meetings. I'll have to dig out some paperwork in the midst of this crisis. Let's throw one other thing on the fire, right? That's not what we want to do. Certainly, we never know when more slots are going to be funded because there absolutely could be years when more people rather than fewer. So even maybe you don't think your situation is that urgent, but you're caught up in a year when lots of new waivers are funded and brought online, then maybe you get services faster than you think. So another great reason to do it. But as the state funds new waivers, there's sort of a matchmaking system where they'll look at the people most urgently in need in your location. They'll offer a number of waivers, and there's a committee that blindly looks through and says, okay, these people are young children. They don't need services that are going to help them live away from parents. These people are ready to move out. Let's offer them a waiver that offers that, right? And so they do their best to match and pair those kinds of things up. If you're on the waiting list at any time, it's public and you should know if you're in priority one, meaning the state considers you to be in some kind of crisis, priority two, holding it together, okay-ish. And priority three, usually again, happy, healthy, stable. A waiver certainly would be a benefit, but you're making it work without it. One of the reasons to be in priority one is the student is in their last year of school. They're becoming ineligible for services through school anymore because they're aging out up to age 27. So there's like a five-ish year window, depending upon how old that student is when they're aging out of school, exactly, because birthdays can be a little funny, that puts them in priority one. If that's the only reason someone's in priority one, it may still be difficult for them to get help, and they may still wait a significant period of time for care. So I just say this to emphasize, getting a waiver is not a guarantee, but one of the best things you can do is advocate for yourself. Call that community services board. They should be checking in with you at least once a year to say, has anything changed on the urgency status of your waiting list? And this is the time to say, yep, I have a diabetes diagnosis and it's draining our money and I can no longer do caregiving. Or my child is so stinking huge, we can't lift them anymore and it's dangerous and we're scared. Or whatever it is that you have going on, throw everything at it, right? That's what they need to know to adjust your status on the waiting list. As promised, here is my contact information. We could talk about waivers for like years, honestly. Like they are a complicated little beast, but hopefully this is enough to give you a sense of, is this a good program option for me and how would I pursue it? If you go to thearcofnova.org, at the top of the page, every page, it says information and referral. And if you put questions there, they only come to me. You can get to that same page by going to thearcofnova.org/answers. I spend a huge amount of my time in meetings, and I can usually get to email questions and questions that go through there a lot faster than phone calls, because during phone calls, I can't also be in a meeting where I'm notoriously for responding to emails. And if I miss you, then I'm leaving a message and playing phone tag and you're waiting, so whatever. So please, if you can, by email. If you can't by email, even if you send a message saying, can you aim to call at this date and time to increase the odds that you'll pick up the phone or what have you, is helpful. So certainly I will respond to you as fast as I absolutely can, which is usually pretty fast. But I just want people to know the best way to reach me in case they have questions. And Liz, did you want to work us through some of the questions that came in while we were talking as people type in other inquiries?
Perfect. Okay. So the first one is, what is the timeline between submitting the application packet to the CSB and the in-person meeting?
And this is a tricky question because there's no mandated timeline. I would say if you turn in your application packet and it's been 2 to 3-ish weeks and you've heard nothing, give them a call. It's been years. I've been at the Arc of Northern Virginia for 15 years. It has been many years since I've heard about the CSB losing an application packet, but everybody's human. Keep copies of everything that you send to everybody, right? Follow up to make sure that they received it. And if they say, I received it, we haven't gotten to it yet, it's perfectly appropriate to say, great, I'll give you a call back in another week if I haven't heard from you. Because if you go 2 to 3 weeks from turning in that packet and haven't heard from them, I would say weekly-ish calls are very appropriate. And that tells them you're serious, you're going to take the first meeting that's available, and they need to focus on getting you in. But they, like everyone else in the world, seemingly are struggling with hiring the right staff and getting everything in place and going as fast as they can. So with kindness and with grace, gentle prods.
And I just put in the woman who we work with, Erin Lauer in Falls Church City. She's amazing. If you just send her an email and just say, I was wondering if our intake packet was received, you know, she will not be able to give you an exact timeline, but she is awesome to say, yes, we received it. You know, we're, you know, you'll be hearing from us.
Yeah. You should expect responsiveness. That's a reasonable expectation. Oh, Liz, you're on mute.
Oh, sorry. I think one of our other questions that came in earlier was, will the slide presentation be available for the participants?
Sure. I'm happy to send it to Liz. And this, as you can imagine, is a presentation we give often. If you loved it so much, you want an encore, you can register. Or you can go to the Arc of Northern Virginia's YouTube page, and there's lots of recordings of it there too. And we have a lot of 3-minute waiver webinars. So that would be things like, what's a waiver in 3 minutes? What's the VIDES in 3 minutes? What are waiver services in 3 minutes? If you want to chunk it back out and think like, that's the piece that I need to focus back in on. Oh, I see that one question got sent to me directly. So I'll say that for DD waivers, are people with above average IQs eligible? Yes. Back when I was a case manager, I had someone with a literal genius IQ who in high school was taking master's level math classes, but he needed significant fine motor support. And he needed some behavior support, and he needed some support to manage his nutrition and diet. And for those reasons, he was able to show, there's no IQ minimum or maximum, he was able to show functionally he had enough needs to qualify for this waiver, and he had attendance with him in college.
The next one we have is, can your turn never come on a DD waiver? Can you be on the wait list forever?
You can be on the waiting list for a long time. But as long as that person with a disability continues to be alive, they will eventually get help. Because everyone's urgency of situation is constantly changing, as things get more dire in that person's life, they've graduated, they're not having help, there's no transportation to where they need to go, they're going to move up that waiting list more quickly. And the thing about being a parent is we also age. And so as we have our own aging related difficulties, that's going to boost the person higher up the waiting list. I have seen a weird trend, please don't do this, where sometimes parents are offered a waiver and they think, I want it right now. Or it's not the waiver with the services I want in 5 years, so I don't want to take it at this moment. The result of that has been some people much further down the waiting list got a surprise waiver offered to them because people who really were very urgently in need turned it down. So my universal advice is if you are offered a waiver, take it, use it as best you can. If you find out this waiver doesn't offer everything you need as that person with a disability is ready to move out or has changing care needs, it's so much easier to move from one type of DD waiver to another than it is to just be sitting out there on the waiting list with 15,000 people across the state. So please, by golly, take it when it comes, and it may be faster than you think.
Is the disability diagnosis, does the disability diagnosis need to come from doctors or psychologists to be official? Where do we start to figure out what tests we would need for our child to get the proper diagnosis?
So a psychological evaluation is the most common. It needs to be someone who is licensed and able to diagnose people. And any professional should be able to tell you, does their license allow them to do that? There are some people who are licensed to do testing and report on the test scores, but not convert that interpretation into a diagnosis as a conclusion. And that's what you need. So a psychologist is usually who you're looking at there. And like I said, what the DD waiver looks at is there's testing that shows the needs and strengths of this person, and there's an IQ score and a diagnosis. Those kind of three pieces: needs, strengths, diagnosis, IQ.
Do school evals count?
Plenty of families use school evaluations. So like my son's evaluation by our school psychologist, for example, would meet eligibility because it has all of those components in it. So if for educational reasons you have or are getting an evaluation, absolutely you can kill two birds with one stone there. Otherwise, my usual thought is go to, if you have an insurance, and see who are the covered psychological providers under your insurance plan and can they do something. And like, the bar is lowish. I'm meaning sometimes families say, I spent $7,000 having days of neurological psych testing done. And if you want to do that and you have the money for that, super. DD evaluations I'm looking for. Needs, IQ, diagnosis can be much, much shorter, cheaper, bare bones. The kind of like entry level diagnosis and evaluation are perfectly fine. So don't overthink it, and certainly don't spend a bunch of money on it.
We are on the waiver list, but I don't recall sharing an IQ. Is this possible? Are we going to be asking to get an IQ somewhere?
They shouldn't have put you on the list without one. So you don't have to do anything. One of the mandates for the community services boards and other folks that work in the waiver system is they take whatever paperwork you used when that person applied, and they are responsible for keeping copies of that for as long as that person's in the service system. So it's their job to hold on and to maintain that. If they ever had an issue with it, they may come back to you, but I've never had someone who later said, you know, we applied, we successfully were put on the waiting list, and then later they came back and said they needed more testing and more diagnosis kind of stuff.
And then Rebecca just stated, you know, there's a special needs group in Falls Church, parents of children who have special needs. If you have not connected with this group, it would be valued to join. Parents helping parents at various stages. And also, you know, as Lucy said, there's a wealth of information. I know sometimes getting on websites and figuring out where to go. So Lucy, thank you for giving us the, you know, the direct line. And I am also here. And I remember, you know, even when I started years ago, the waivers were separate. It was first come, first serve, and how the state has really streamlined things to make it as easy as possible for parents. It is a great thing, but there are bumps in the road. There can be, you know, like the wait list, some, you know, being unsure of if, you know, the information is there. So feel free to always reach out, myself in the district, Lucy. There are, and also some people with the special ed, you know, with the parent group is a wonderful option. Oh, Rebecca, is this an FCCPS group?
It's not an official Falls Church City Public Schools group. It's a group of parents and some of the SPED advisory members, and it's been really good and very supportive. It's not really focused a lot on school issues. I know those are some of the topics, but it really is about this session has been really good because the waivers tend to be a lot of the questions that folks have. But, you know, how do you find, the barbershop that is sensory friendly so you can, you know, take your kids to get a haircut? Who's a great pediatrician that does well with, you know, kids with disabilities? And, you know, and our social workers are always available to help as well if you have questions, because the services are so linked, are so closely linked to the CSB and the Community Services Board, and our social workers are the liaisons for that support as well. I think the question is, how do you join this group? You can, I believe it's on Facebook. and a couple other places. Maybe Ms. Ford can help us with that if you want to connect with some parents. That's one of the reasons why we're doing some of these sessions, to give parents the opportunities to connect with each other. And then you can always reach out to me and I can get you in contact with our special ed advisory group chair, and she can get you there. Any other waiver questions for our friend Lucy?
Okay, well, feel free to reach out to me anytime with all questions, waiver and not waiver, anything in the developmental disability realm. We do a lot of advising families on.
Thank you, Lucy, so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for joining us.